Om Agnatim Anandasya Anjana Jana Sulakaya Chakshu Sumilatam Jaina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapandantika Vansa Kapatubhyascha Kripasindhu Vayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. I'd like to speak a little about the pastime where Ajamil was delivered. Now, Ajamil was a very nice Brahmin boy, and then he saw something. He saw a Sudra low-class person embracing a prostitute in public. And his mind was so deeply affected by this. And he brought the prostitute into his house, and his whole life went upside down. He was very pure prior to this. But then, by bad association, he threw his young wife out of the house even, and just spent his life with this prostitute. And through this prostitute, he begat many children. And to satisfy her financially, he committed so many abominable activities. He would kill people. He was a murderer, thief, gambler. He would do anything to get money. He was a drunkard, everything. What a pity, in a very real sense. How sad that this very pure-hearted person became a convert of Kali, and so sinful and abominable. So, as a result of sinful activities, of improper activities, of activities in the mode of ignorance, one has to pay a price for that, if not at the present, but in the future. But Ajamil, somehow or another, he named his son Narayan. And he was very attached to his son, and the Bhagavatam describes him as being 86 years old and having this 4 or 5, 6-year-old son named Narayan. So it came time, as it will for every embodied soul, it came time for him to leave his body. Death had caught him around the neck and started squeezing him. And the terror that entered his heart at that time caused him to take shelter of that which he was attached to. And of all the things in the world that he was attached to, he was attached to his son, Narayan. And obviously, when death is approaching, we grasp, not obviously we grasp for things, but we do grasp for something to hold on to. And obviously, nothing that we can hold on to of this world, this is what we were speaking about yesterday, about the false shelters, they show their true color when we actually attempt to hold on to them, and they're insufficient. They don't have the potency, they don't have the substance to give us the shelter that we're looking for. And Prabhupada compares this to, and I've actually seen it in Port Melbourne, not the full analogy, but But it's like Prabhupada said, it's like trying to cross the ocean by holding onto the tail of a dog. So the dogs, sometimes they get out in the water and they paddle around. But they can only go a short distance before they have to come back to land. And there I am, stuck in the ocean of death. I'm dying. And I'm trying to gain security by holding on to the tail of the dog. And what's going to happen? I'm going to drown. So all that we take shelter of in our normal day, when things don't go our way, at the time of death, we try the same things. And although the things of this world may give us some solace in our life, they may quiet our mind down for a while. We get angry at someone. We do this, we do that. These are all the mind looking to avoid reality and looking for some shelter. So somehow or another, Ajamil foolishly took shelter of his son. Very unfortunate, but in the seed of misfortune, there is often fortune. In misfortune, there's often a seed of fortune. And the fortune that he had was that his son was named Narayan. So he was calling out in great distress and fear and terror, Narayan, Narayan, Narayan. Foolishly calling his son. As the Yamadutas, the messengers of death, were ripping him against his will, the soul against his will, along with the subtle body. Against his will, ripping him with the nooses of Yamaraj, the ropes of Yamaraj, which are unstoppable, ripping him from his body. And he was calling out, Narayan, in great distress, terror. And the Yamadutas were fearful to see. And that increased his terror and the pain of leaving his body. And then, immediately, the Vishnudutas came, the messengers or order carriers of Lord Vishnu. And he said, stop! You cannot take him! And a discussion takes place. Now, this, which canto of the Bhagavatam is this described in? The sixth canto, right at the very beginning of the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam. So in the first chapter it describes his life and up to this point, and then in the second chapter it begins to describe the conversation between the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas. Now, the death is not used to being stopped. When death comes, everyone retreats. But here, in this situation, the Yamadutas, death, was foiled. And they began to say, why are you stopping us? How could you stop us? Where is your authority? And after all, he is so sinful. He has disobeyed religion, religious principles. He has done this. And they just typed his name into the database, and it came up, and press enter, and boom, oh, look what he's done. Look what he's done. He's so sinful that for his own good, and he has performed no atonement for that. He's committed sins, there is no prayaschitta, there is no atonement, and therefore for his own good, for his own purification, so he learns his lesson, we are taking him to the court of Yamaraj to be judged and punished for his purification. This is the law. He's sinful, he must be punished for his own good. And the Vishnudutas replied that you're supposed to be, Yamaraj means Dharmaraj. You are supposed to be the servants of Dharma, of religion, religiosity. And it shocks us to see that the one who is supposed to be carrying out the principles, the laws of religion, does not understand religion. Does not understand who is sinful and who is sinless. This man is sinless. Ajamil is sinless. They let him look at the screen, or they made a printout. Said, look what he's done. And he has not performed any atonement for anything. And then in the beginning of the second chapter, the Vishnudutas explain that, and there's a list of sins. I won't read them all, but they are horrible. Stealing gold, drunkard, betraying a friend or a relative, killing a Brahmin, killing improper activities with the wife of one's spiritual master or superiors, drinking, everything, killing. The best atonement, the Vishnudutas say, is chanting the holy name of the Lord. And because he has chanted the name of Narayana, he has atoned. Everything has been wiped out, and he is pure. Now, the verse itself, this is what it says. Sarve sham api agatvam. Of all sins, of all sinning activities, sinful activities, agatvam means of anyone who has committed aga or sin, idam eva suniskritam, the best atonement for this, of every activity that's sinful, the best atonement is nama viharanam Vishnu yatastad visaya mati. The best atonement is nama viharanam, the chanting of the name of Vishnu. Why? Yatastad visaya mati. Because it attracts the mati. What does mati mean? Matir na Krishna? Intelligence or attention or consciousness. Take it as the attention. Because this chanting attracts the attention of Vishnu, of the Lord. Yatastad visyamati. Now, a very mysterious verse with very, very deep meaning. Here is Prabhupada's translation. Listen to it carefully. I'll read the second part especially. The first part, there's two verses together. And then it is also the best method of atonement for one who murders women, the king or his father, for one who slaughters cows, and for all other sinful men. Simply by chanting the holy name of Lord Vishnu, such sinful persons may attract the attention of the Supreme Lord, who therefore considers, because this man has chanted my holy name, my duty is to give him protection. Yatastad visaya mati. Because his attention, because it attracts the attention of the Lord. This is the literal meaning of the verse. It is the best method of atonement because when we chant the holy name, it attracts the attention of the Lord. But what has Prabhupada said in the verse? Because this man, it attracts the attention of the Supreme Lord, who therefore considers, because this man has chanted my holy name, my duty is to give him protection. Do you hear the difference? The verse says, Yatastad Vishamati, it attracts the attention of the Lord, and Prabhupada adds something. It attracts the attention of the Supreme Lord, who therefore considers, because this man has chanted my holy name, my duty is to give him protection. Now, I would like to ask another question, and because what I'm going to read, comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on this verse, will also answer this question. The question is, the Lord, the vision that Ajamil was dying, he chanted the holy name, the Yamadutas came, and then the Vishnudutas came to save him. So the question is, how or why did they come and save him? How did they know that this was all taking place? So Vishwanath will answer this question too. Prabhupada puts it in, he doesn't have any purport to this verse, but in the next verse he comments, he explains some of this. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment is very, very pointed on these points that I wish to speak about. Now, what are the two questions that I was saying that was going to be answered? Does anyone remember one of them? Yes, Sasha? Yes. And the second, or the first question I mentioned, but which is, or the second question? Okay, Sasha? Huh? I did so. I'll prove it to you by, since I'm such a bad teacher that no one remembers anything that I say, I'm going to have to say it again. Okay. Prabhupada, the verse says, Yatastad Vishamati, that the best type of atonement is the chanting Nama Viharanam Vishnu, Idam Iva Suniskritam, that the Suniskritam means atonement. The best type of atonement for all types, Agavan, Agatvam, all types of sin is Nama Viharanam Vishnu. Why? Yatastad Vishyamati, because it attracts, the chanting attracts the mati or intelligence or attention of the Lord. So that is the literal translation of it. Now, Prabhupada says in his translation, simply by chanting the holy name of Lord Vishnu, such sinful persons may attract the attention of the Supreme Lord. That's what the verse says. But he also adds, who therefore considers, because this man has chanted my holy name, my duty is to give him protection. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment, his tika on this, will explain why, where Prabhupada got that extra point from. Because there is an extra point, yes? The verse says, Yatastad Vishyamati, that attracts the attention of the Lord. And Srila Prabhupada's translation, not quite literal, says, the Lord attracts the attention of the Supreme Lord, who therefore considers, because this man has chanted my holy name, my duty is to give him protection. He adds something. He adds something wonderful. He adds something very reassuring. He adds something that comes from the mind, the thinking of the Supreme Lord. Where did he get it from? Why did he do that? And this will give us some understanding of Prabhupada's mind when we understand this. And we will understand the answer to this question, as well as the second question, how the Vishnudutas came Krishna willing, when I read the comment or part of the comment of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment is huge on this. The translation that I have when typed out, printed out, it's 10 pages. I'll just read a very, very small amount, 10 wonderful pages, and the answer is no, before you ask me if you can have it. But you can find it. You can find it in Banaswami's translation of the commentaries of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, His Holiness Banaswami's. Now, here's what he says. The name of the Lord may destroy sins, but how can Namabhas be the atonement for thousands? Namabhas means he chanted without offense. He wasn't sinning, performing these activities and thinking, after I perform these horrible activities, after I lie and cheat and steal and betray and drink and murder, then I'll chant the holy name and become free. That is Namad Balad Yasi Papabudi. This is Aparad, Namaparad. Ajamil's mood wasn't like that. He was simply a sinner. There wasn't crookedness in his chanting. There wasn't duplicity. He just chanted, calling out the name of his son, which is one of the types of Namabhasa, or not offensive chanting, and not pure chanting, not chanting with love, but chanting that is just innocent, just calling out the name of Krishna with no motive, no duplicity, no crookedness. So how can the chanting of the holy name in this Namabhastes, calling out the name of your son, how can it cause the atonement or the removal of the sinful reactions for the unlimited sinful activities, horrendous, abominable activities that this Ajamil committed? The sinful results for the kind of things he did, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, the thousands of grave sins, which it cannot be destroyed by thousands of 12-year vratas. So how could this calling out his son's name have had this effect? Stena means a gold thief. But a gold thief. Chanting is the best atonement, Suniskritam, since it destroys the root of sin. A 12-year vow of atonement, though it destroys the effect of sin, cannot destroy the root of sin. Now here it's where it starts to become extremely interesting. But this is not the only result of chanting the name of the Lord. The Lord's mind dwells, yatastad vishayamati. It dwells, his attention becomes captured by a person who chants his holy name. The Lord thinks, this person belongs to me. I will always protect him. This is Srila Sridhar Swami's meaning of the phrase. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has taken a comment of Srila Sridhar Swami, the authorized commentator on the Bhagavatam. He's taken it and placed it in his own commentary. And Srila Prabhupada, making sure that we don't miss this important point, that because if Krishna's attention becomes attracted to us by chanting, There's different ways someone's attention can become attracted to us. If a murderer's attention becomes attracted to us and he's thinking, I want to kill this person, that's one way attention becomes attracted to us. And if Krishna's attention becomes attracted to us, this person is so sinful, he must die and suffer and burn. We're not all going to smile and feel very, very relieved when we hear that. So Srila Sridhar Swami and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur have revealed the nature of the Lord's attention upon us. And Srila Prabhupada has very kindly placed it, not in the purport even, but in the verse itself. So we don't miss this point. That Krishna thinks, this man has chanted my holy name and my duty is to give him protection. The Lord thinks, this person belongs to me. He has chanted my name. He belongs to me. I will always protect him. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary continues. Hearing his name being chanted and remembering Ajamil, the Lord ordered us, the Vishnudutas, to bring Ajamil, who was chanting his name. Prabhupada puts in his comment how the Lord is omnipotent. He is everywhere. He knows all things. He's omnipresent, omnipotent. When Nanda Maharaj was taken by the Yamadutas, not the Yamadutas, the Varunadutas, when he was bathing in a place in Vrindavan that is called Nandagat now, in the Yamuna. Raise your hand if you've been to Nandagat and Ramagat. Oh, yes. Very good. Lucky. In this place, Nanda Maharaj, after an ekadasi, he went to bathe in the Yamuna at a time where it was considered incorrectly that it was too early at a demonic time, and he was taken away by the messengers of Varunadev. So what did it look like? It looked like he went into the water and then he disappeared, taken to the abode of Varunadev. But for the cowherd men who were watching this event, what did it look like? It looked like he drowned. And Krishna was not there at all. And they began calling out, because at any time, Anena Sarva Durga Ni, at any time, when there was any difficulty, they called out always and unfailingly to Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And Krishna immediately appeared there. Immediately he came. Because Krishna is everywhere at all times. And as we hear and learn from the pastime of Lord Nrisimhadev and Prahlad, that when Hiranyakashipu asked Prahlad, you are always praying to a god other than me, saying there is someone more powerful than me. Where is he? I don't see him. For the non-devotee, they don't see God anywhere. And for a devotee, they see him everywhere. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena. All places, all times, all circumstances, they see him and his mercy. So Hiranyakashipu, seeing him nowhere, challenged Prahlad, who was seeing him everywhere, Is he everywhere? Yes, Father. Oh, he didn't call him Father. Oh, best of the Asuras. He's everywhere. If he's everywhere, then he's also in this pillar. Because the pillar is somewhere, and everywhere includes somewhere. He's in this pillar. Yes, Father. So he said, then before I kill you, I will kill him. And although he was holding the sword, he was reserving the sword in his hand for killing Prahlad. And he smashed the pillar with his fist. And we all know the happy ending of that pastime. But Lord Nrsingadev came out roaring. And although he was everywhere, he came out in a form. This is Krishna's Achintya Shakti. Although he's omnipotent, although he is everywhere, he's everywhere in a personal form. Inconceivable. This is inconceivable power of Krishna. So when Ajamil chanted the name of Narayan, Lord Narayan, immediately his attention went to him. Thinking, he has chanted my name. He is mine. He is mine. It is my duty to give him protection. Even though he didn't even look at the list of all the sinful activities that he had performed, he pressed the delete button, so to speak. I shouldn't trivialize the weight of this point. Now keep in mind, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says it directly. Hearing his name being chanted and remembering Ajamil, the Lord ordered us, the Vishwanduttas are saying, to bring Ajamil who was chanting his name. And then Vishwanath says, how much more the Lord will remember a person who chants the Lord's name with a service attitude. Ajamil was just calling out consciously his son's name. What to speak of? This is called Kamutya Nyaya. This is what to speak of. If this result came to Ajamil when he was just calling out his son's name, what to speak of what the Lord's consciousness is like when someone is calling out to him in a service attitude? Or what to speak of someone who's calling out to him with prema, with love? What to speak of someone who is calling out to him with the special love that Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is teaching. What to speak of? Now, I would like to just take this wonderful point that reveals the mind of Krishna. Tastad vishamati nama viharanam Vishnu, that his attention comes to the ones who, to one, anyone who chants his name, especially without offense, because Ajamil was not being offensive. Wonderful point. How kind and how soft and how generous our Lord is. Now I'd like to take that point and just give it a little bit of a turnaround. That I sit down to chant Krishna's name every day, or sometimes I stand up and I chant. And And what is the result according to this? According to what we just read, what is the result? Krishna. Krishna's attention becomes attracted to me. And what does he see? He sees someone. Oh, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Ram, Hare Ram. Ram, 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 Ram. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. How much more time? And I thought no one knew. I thought no one knew that I have no attraction for Krishna, that it is boring, and I'm thinking, well, at least I've finished my rounds today. I've got them over and done with. I've got my association with Krishna for today finished. Really, I've missed the whole thing. I've missed the whole thing. So, the point that I would like to make is a very simple point, but it is a direct point, and it's something to keep in mind. That Krishna's attention becomes attracted to us when we chant. And at least let him see us trying to chant with attention. With attention, because Krishna is there. We have a connection with him. We have a natural connection with him. We have a connection with him through his holy name. He is there. Let us at least, we may not be able to chant with the highest love. We may not be able to chant with any love. We may not be able to chant with focus. With full shelter, rather. But let us at least try to chant, make the endeavor to chant without the offense known as pramada and any of the other offenses against the holy name. And this attempt, the attempt to be there with Krishna, I may not be very successful, but the attempt to be there with Krishna as I chant his holy name is my offering to him, or a big part of my offering to him. That little sincerity is what we can offer. What to speak of the result if we offer this? What to speak of the result that comes from chanting the holy name properly as Mahaprabhu wants us to chant with prema? This is one point that I'd like to make. But there is another very a corollary point that is also is weighty, is this. Is that, and Prabhupada has said this, you've probably heard it. I would have liked to have played a lecture segment that I have where Prabhupada says it directly. But he quotes his Guru Maharaj saying, "Don't try and see, but yes, but act in such a way that Krishna will see you." And Prabhupada would very often say that this was his Guru Maharaj's mood, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and this he picked up from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and was passing it to us. Don't try and see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna will see you. Now, this doesn't mean we shouldn't try and see Krishna when we stand in front of Radha Balava. We should close our eyes. Or Or that, oh, I'm not supposed to try to think of Krishna or see a picture of Krishna or think of Krishna when I'm chanting. No. What this means is whatever our ability to see Krishna is, it is insufficient. It is insufficient. We simply don't have, because Krishna reveals himself to Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena, to someone who has prema. We don't have the ability to place ourselves in Goloka Vrindavan. Sambhavam Yatma Mayaya. Krishna never leaves. Padam Ekam Nagacchati. He never leaves Vrindavan. The residents of Vrindavan are always seeing him, either in separation or in meeting. They're always and only seeing Krishna. So one really, to see Krishna, has to have Vrindavan consciousness, which means loving consciousness, loving service, prema. That's what it means to see Krishna. So we don't have the ability to see Krishna, but we should act in such a way that Krishna will see us, and then by His mercy, then, okay, come. When Krishna says, come, then we are there. And until he says, come, the door remains forever locked. We cannot force our way in. We cannot. We should act in such a way that Krishna will see us. This, in a very large, to a large degree, is the teachings of Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Act in such a way that Krishna will see you. What does that mean? How to act? How can I do something? How can I do this service in such a way that Krishna will see me? Should I wear, red hair, painted all my, those things like that, wear, what should I do? Scream all the time so Krishna can't avoid seeing me? Well, very often if we act like that, like everyone else, he'll turn away from us if someone's acting in a completely outrageous way. But what will attract Krishna's attention? To see us. And not only see us, but see us in such a way that his heart melts. Yes, his heart can melt. And he thinks, oh, let me bring him to me. All right. Come. Now there's a pastime that everyone knows very, very well that I would like to mention at this point. A very wonderful pastime in Vrindavan, pastime of Krishna's, that again Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment is very revealing. And that pastime is Krishna's Damodar Leela, where Krishna steals butter. First, actually, before he's stealing butter, he's asleep. And then he wakes up, and what does a nice lala do when he wakes up? He wants his mother, and he begins to cry. And when he begins to cry, immediately Mother Yasoda, who is churning butter, stops everything, and she goes and picks up her boy. Oh, Krishna, oh, my. And she begins to feed him her breast milk. And and then Krishna stops crying, and he's so happy. He's so happy because he's drinking her affection in the form of her milk. And we could also comment at this point, this is what cow's milk is when done in the proper way. Because you see this in India, and you'll never see it in Australia, except possibly here, but not anymore, is that when they milk the cow, what do they do? When they milk the cow, what do? They bring the calf. And you sometimes see the calves, they're going like this with their head into the udder of the cow. Have you seen that? They go like this. More, more. And the mother doesn't take it as an insult or anything like that. When out of affection, she drops the milk into the udder. And the cow is drinking. So that milk is the affection. It is coded. It's produced from the affection of the mother towards the calf. And by Krishna's amazing arrangement, there's much more milk than a calf can drink. And if a calf drinks all the milk of the cow, the calf will get sick and even die possibly. So that extra milk is meant for all of us. And what are we drinking? We're drinking the same affection that the cow has for the calf. But today's materialists have a much better way of doing it. They turn the cow, which is so miraculous. I mean, you can't eat grass and turn it into milk. The cow takes grass that we don't eat and turns it into milk, which is the greatest nourishment for our, not only for our body, but for our consciousness. Because everyone longs. What is the most nourishing thing for our consciousness? Someone said it, but not loudly. Affection. Well, is it true or isn't it true? True. Yes. Who said that? Thank you very much. It's true. It's darn true. And if we don't get enough affection, we become starved for affection, and we look in the wrong places for affection, and we get into so much trouble in that way, looking for it where it isn't. Consciousness becomes nourished by affection, and ultimately, that's why a devotee can wander in this world fearlessly. A devotee, because he's so assured that Prabhupada describes this in one of his purports in the Bhagavad Gita, that he's never alone, and Prabhupada said this also. I never feel alone. I always feel with my Guru Maharaj. Or else how could you, so a devotee he can wander in this world. He wanders in this world, never alone, but nourished always by the affection of Krishna. He lives in the mercy of Krishna. This is what it means to be a devotee. And this is what we're all longing for, obviously. So, Mother Yasoda was nourishing Krishna with her Shuddha Vatsalya Prema. And Krishna was so eagerly drinking it. And suddenly, what happened? The milk pot that was boiling the milk. Yes, it became overflowing. And Mother Yasoda put Krishna down. And our acharyas explained the philosophical significance to Dhyanam Samacharam, that those things that are used in Krishna's service are so dear, have to be taken care of so carefully. So she even valued that which was going to please Krishna, the milk, more than, and she put Krishna down to do that, quite amazingly. And Krishna became very angry because this pastime was going to take place. Oh, my mother. Because Krishna, he always likes to get his way. I mean, who does he think he is anyway? God? He always wants, and when he doesn't get his way, he gets angry. So he became very angry and said, "Oh, I'm going to do something very naughty to my mother. She didn't, he wanted her affection so much. So he broke the milk pot, and feeling quite the victim, was crying and rubbing his eyes, and false tears are coming out. Look what she did to me. Oh, everyone's done me wrong. Oh, it's all everyone else's fault. See, it comes from Krishna himself, so don't worry about it. So then he broke pots and he broke with the yut and he started feeding the monkeys and everything like that. And he was really enwrapped in that consciousness. And then his mother had fixed the problem with the pot, and she came out and she said, "I know who's done this. It is my naughty and restless son, Krishna. What's going to happen to him when he grows up if he continues this kind of thing? Mothers are mothers, you know, always. What's going to happen to him if he has this kind of behavior? And like, I have to teach him something. I have to teach him not to do this, not to be so restless, not to steal, not to break the pots." So she picked up a stick. I will put some fear into his consciousness, that he shouldn't do these things. He shouldn't steal butter. He shouldn't break the pots. And she began very, very close, walking up to him very softly, because she knew that quietly, so she knew that he would run away otherwise. And suddenly Krishna saw her and said, "Uh-oh." His whole victim thing, it just disappeared, and he became afraid. And he became running and running and running, and Mother Yasoda caught him by the hand. "I'll teach you. You don't do this. You don't be so naughty." And he was actually afraid. Now, Kunti Devi remembers this in her prayers in what canto? What chapter? Eighth. And she is wonderstruck, because she's not exactly in the mood of a Brijbasi. She's outside watching the Brijbasis, their mood. She's wonderstruck by Krishna's crying, and tears rolling down, and the kajal, the mascara, is making his cheeks and everything black. And he's crying and crying and crying. And Kunti Devi says, "I'm amazed at this. How you are crying when Mother Yasoda, you who fear personified fears, you're crying and fearing Mother Yasoda's punishment. I'm amazed at this." Some commentators say, why Kunti Devi is saying it's wonderful is because she's thinking it's amazing how the Supreme Lord is imitating the activities of ordinary persons and fearful. But Srila Jiva Goswami says, no, that is not what is amazing to Kunti Devi, because if she understood it, it wouldn't be wonderful and amazing. And that's an understanding. And it's not, I mean, it's wonderful, but it's not shockingly amazing if Krishna is just imitating. But Srila Jiva Goswami comments that what's really wonderful and what's really amazing is that Krishna is feeling fear from his mother. Because this is Braja Bhakti, how powerful Braja Bhakti is, how powerful love for Krishna is. That Krishna, he knows everything. He knows everything. He's aware of everything. But because Mother Yasoda wants to love him as her boy, his consciousness of knowing everything contradicts her desire for him to be just his boy. And therefore, who wins between Krishna's consciousness and his devotee's consciousness? It's the devotee's consciousness that wins.
So his consciousness contracts. So he's not aware of anything. He forgets that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he's just overwhelmed by the loving mood of Mother Yasoda. He's completely overwhelmed and captivated by Mother Yasoda's love for him. And he's just like a little boy, and therefore tears are coming from his eyes out of fear, real fear. That is amazing, because he still is the unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead. But how amazing is this Braja Prema? So Mother Yasoda sees him crying and says, "Oh, I've overdone it. It's not good that he becomes too fearful." So she thinks, "I'll tie him up instead, and she puts away the stick. And Krishna is really afraid. He says, "If she ties me up, how will I do my daily duty of stealing butter? I don't want to get tied up. I don't want to get tied up." And he's crying, "I don't want to get tied up." Now Krishna is in the consciousness of a little boy. "I don't want her to tie me up. I don't want to. What would the monkeys do without feeding, getting fed? My friends, the monkeys." He's in the mood of a little boy, but his Sarva Sankalpa Shakti, his Icha Shakti, his Shakti that fulfills his desires starts to act, and it evokes his Vibhuti Shakti, his Shakti of opulence, inconceivable potency. And Mother Yasoda tries to bind Krishna, and she can't do it. Two fingers too short. So she thinks, "Oh, I have to do it." So she takes out the rope that's binding her hair. She adds that to it. And it's still 2 inches too short. So she asks one of her friends, "Get me some more rope, please. Well, I have to teach this boy a lesson. He's so naughty, isn't he?" Because this happens in, does anyone know which chapter of the 10th canto? I'll tell you. The 9th chapter, and in the 8th chapter, right before that, Krishna has stolen from everyone's house. He's stolen butter from everyone's house, all the neighbors' house, and they've come to complain to Mother Yasoda. And Krishna just, Mother Yasoda, they're sitting, "Your boy has done this and this and this and this and this." And Krishna's just sitting there. He's just smiling, and Mother Yasoda. And they say to him, "Well, you'll find out when he does something to you. You'll find out what it's like." So now Mother Yasoda has found out. So she says to one of the neighbors, "Please get some rope. I want to tie up this boy. You are right. He's so naughty. I'll have to teach him a lesson." So they bring rope. And it's still 2 inches too short. And Mother Yasoda is beginning, and she gets more rope and more rope and more rope and more rope and more rope. And more rope, and more rope. And still, it's 2 fingers too short. And she's thinking, "What is going on here? No matter how much rope I bring, my boy's waist isn't growing, and the rope isn't getting shorter. This is amazing. I can't bind him. His waist was this big, basically. I can't bind him. And what's also amazing, no matter how much rope I add, it's still exactly the same amount too short, 2 fingers. And then all the ladies come and say, Oh. "I think your son must have some pious credits. So I don't think you're going to be able to bind him. Just accept that he's going to be like this." And Mother Yasoda was very determined out of her pure love. And she said, "If it takes me to get every single rope in the entire village of Vrindavan, I'm going to find out how big are my sons? How much is it going to take to bind him? And as she was doing this and work getting the ropes, and getting, she became so exhausted and bewildered. And then, Krishna's Kripa Shakti, her desire was so great, out of all based on her love. Then, because Krishna's Salva Sankalpa Shakti was working, and then his, what was the other one? No, Vibhuti Shakti, Icha Shakti, and Salva Sankalpa are the same. All his desires are fulfilled, and Icha, all his desires, and then his Vibhuti Shakti, his Shakti of opulence, they were working, and no matter what was happening, she couldn't bind him. But then, the king of all his Shaktis was evoked, his Kripa Shakti. His mercy. Oh, my mother is working so hard to bind me. And then when the Kripa Shakti got evoked, Krishna's heart, which is as soft as butter, melted. And all, and the Salva Sankalpa Shakti and the Vibhuti Shakti just sort of like when you close down Skype. You know that funny sound it makes? Not like that exactly. It's more transcendental. But they all withdrew. And Mother Yasoda was able to bind Krishna. Now, don't steal Mother anymore. Do you understand now? Just crying and crying and crying. She kind of, actually the pastime continues in such an amazing way. But this is what we will tell right now. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in his comment, and he's filled in a lot of those, some of those details that I've mentioned. The two fingers represent two things. One is the parisrama. Does anyone know that word? The meaning of parisrama? Endeavor. Endeavor, oh work, the work. There is no work that Mother Yasoda could do, actually, to bind Krishna. And the second finger, but yet one finger was the work and the other finger was Krishna's kripa, Krishna's mercy. So there's no work that Mother Yasoda could do to bind Krishna, but without the work, without the parishrama, without the endeavor, the Kripa Shakti doesn't become evoked. So there's, he explains, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains there are two things. There's Bhakti Nishta, the devotee's persistence and firm resolve that I want to please Krishna. That when Krishna looks at me, when his attention comes to me, that he'll his kripa, his mercy to me will be evoked. So there's two things. The bhakti nishtha, the determination, the persistence, the devotion, the attempt, the sincere attempt of the devotee to act in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. Of course, on the Mother Yasoda level, it's different. I mean, it's different in the sense it's spontaneous. She was fully mother. But we as servants, aspiring servants, should take this principle and apply it to ourselves of how can I act in such a way. So that was the question that this pastime I mentioned that will indicate that I wanted to make, is that how to act in such a way that Krishna is, that because if we don't try and see Krishna but act in such a way that Krishna will see us, how can I act in such a way that Krishna will see me and be pleased and his mercy will be evoked? Because he's swanishta, his own nature is merciful. He's steady in his mercy. It's a steady aspect. As the devotee is steady in his persistence
his determination, his attempt to please Krishna. Krishna is steady in his swanish, his own nature. He's steady, reliably steady in his mercy, his kindness, his immediate reciprocation with the sincere attempt of the devotee. And the gap is closed. The impossibly huge gap is closed by Krishna's kripa shakti. But unless we do our parishrama, our sincere, not just hard work, but sincere attempt to please Krishna, acting in such a way that Krishna will see us, then his kripa shakti doesn't become evolved. So this is the meditation of a devotee, an aspiring devotee. This is something to think about. How should I act? How should I do this service? How should I do this service? How should I live my life? How should I serve? I'm sweeping the floor of the temple. How should I sweep the floor in such a way that Krishna will, attention will come to me and he won't turn the other way when he sees me. That his mercy will be evoked. This is something to think about. And today, on this day, when we're going to chant, we're chanting 64 rounds on this very auspicious Ekadasi, we should keep this in mind. That while we're chanting, yatastad vishyamati, that Krishna's attention comes to us. Now, when we're chanting, we try, recommending that try to put our attention to the chanting, to try to be there with Krishna in the chanting, to try to hear one mantra, to try to give the mind a simple task that it can actually accomplish. Because otherwise, if we don't make the task of the mind simple means the mode of goodness. Otherwise, what happens to the mind? It becomes influenced by the mode of passion, and what happens is we start the plan making and thinking about things, and that passion is born of which mode of material nature? Excuse me, intelligence is born of which mode of material nature? Passion, according to Kapila Muni's teachings. So even though we like intelligence is very good at this particular time when we're chanting, we don't want to evoke all the great thoughts and wonderful concepts and all the great plans and how we're going to even serve Krishna. We don't want to do that while we're chanting japa, because that's evoking the intelligence which is born of passion. And then what happens is the mind gets wound up, and what becomes a simple good thought in the beginning turns into a whole network of complexities, and you can't bring your mind back to hearing one mantra. Even what to speak of hearing many mantras. So keep the task of the mind simple meaning in the mode of goodness. Just try to hear one name of Krishna, one mantra. And the mind will say, you know, why can't I do something passionate like I do all day long, you know, and scheme and plot and, you know, etc., and criticize and plan and this and that and justify myself. So try to keep the mind, bring it back to the mode of goodness, which is its natural home, in this way, by trying to hear. So as we're chanting on this day, at some times maybe get a little tired or whatever, or we can become distracted by this thought that's essential and that thought or whatever, and just remember that it's hard work to be with Krishna in the holy name, but try to act in such a way that Krishna will be pleased when he's, because his attention is on us. Isn't that amazing? His attention is on us, and consider, what is he going to see? Is he going to see someone who's sincerely trying to be with Krishna on this day and chant in an attentive way? Or is he going to see someone who fully surrendered to the mind, or is he going to see one that's trying to push the beads as quickly as possible, just, you know, to get done 64 rounds so I can think, oh, I've chanted 64 rounds? Or, I mean, I'm not saying that even in a critical way, because, you know, all the horrible mental states I've experienced when I'm chanting. But just ask that question, well, what is Krishna seeing? And this is the mentality that has to shift in us, the transformation, the change to the core. Instead of keeping ourself at the center and thinking, what am I going to see all the time? What is there for me to see? What is there for me to enjoy? What is there for me, 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 and seeing the whole world as if it's the object of my seeing and enjoyment? But the great transformation has to take place of stopping seeing ourselves as the seer, but seeing ourselves as the seen. This is a point very nicely made in the book by His Holiness Bhakti Vikash Maharaj about Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, drishya vichar, that we are the seen, and everything that we are seeing with the eyes of our false ego is actually seen by Krishna and meant for him. When we see the deities, of course we want to see the deities, but we come for darshan, to be seen by the deities, to present ourselves before him, before them. Here, what are you seeing? Oh no. Here I've come in my jeans and my this and my that, or I should be present myself. It changes everything. It orders your consciousness when you think of yourself as the scene. So then you say, what should they see? At least when I come before them, let them see someone bringing a gift before I present him my long list of all the things I want from him. At least let me give him something. It changes everything if we change this point of consciousness. And when we're chanting japa again, remember this verse and wonderful pastime of Ajamil being saved, sinful, horrible, abominable, acting Ajamil, sinless, because the Lord's attention came to him. So we can say, oh, how nice, the Lord's attention is on me, I'm sinless. Or we could say, oh Lord, oh no, his attention is on me, what is he seeing? Become the object, not the subject. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. This is what I wanted to tell you. I've been holding back until right now. Now I've said it.
You mentioned that you could speak something about Srila Prabhupada's mood when you mentioned that particular point in the focus. Could you elaborate?
Which?
When you mentioned that we could see something of Srila Prabhupada's mood by his adding to the translation.
Yes. He wanted us to get this point, that it wasn't literally in the verse. It wasn't literally in the verse, but Prabhupada took something so essential from the acharyas. He didn't make it up at all. He wasn't adding. But he took something, the essence of what the acharyas had to give us, and he took that and put it right there so you couldn't miss it. So we see something in Prabhupada's very, very kind and merciful mood, giving the essential message of the acharyas in a very non-mistakable and undeniable way. But we should become a little deeper and understand.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur ki jai, Sri Krishna ki jai, Mother Yasoda ki jai, Sri Vrajadhama ki jai, Ajamila ki jai, Lord Vishnu ki jai, Vishnu Dutas ki jai, Radha Balava ki jai, Radha Balava Bhaktavinda ki jai, Sri Gona Thai ki jai, Rasa Bihari Lala ki jai, Giriraj Maharaj ki jai. Sri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Devi ki jai. Hare Krishna. Did I miss anyone over there? Who's that right at the end? Over there. Balagopal, that's what I thought, especially after telling that pastime. Sri Balagopal ki jai.